Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd now joined by my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Trance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What is up?
What's Trance? What's up, man?
You missed a good one off the top of the show.
Oh, no kidding. Holy cow.
Like, so we're at seven games in the playoffs now. And I would say at least three, but probably four. Like,
you score in the last 99 seconds to advance.
To advance, that counts too.
100%.
Like, four super memorable classic playoff game moments already.
Four sort of like pinch me.
Yeah.
Did that just happen? Oh my God.
Yeah. Jump off the couch and scream and hug your buddy. Like, yeah.
Unreal stuff. Unreal stuff. And that one might have been the Apex version, right? Because
I think it was.
Oh, for sure.
Which is your rival game round two.
Heavy
so the stakes
underdogs.
Are up.
And then, you know, the Oilers come out and take it to you in the first 20 minutes. I actually thought there was a lot to like about the Canucks 5-on-5 game right off the hop. I was saying so on Twitter. People were like, oh, you're always just zagging. Contrarian take from... And it's like, I don't know, like, if the Oilers' lead is built on Ian Cole making mistakes, like, that's not durable. Because Ian Cole's super reliable. You know what? Like, nightmare start for the Canucks. They were a little bit sloppy, but they also had Garland loose behind the defense. They hit a post in the first period. They had that, like, 80-second heavy shift from the JT Miller line to close the first frame. And, you know, I thought there were signs all night that, like, Miller and Besser were causing McDavid to expend a little bit too much energy below the hash marks in the defensive zone. And he was, like, outright losing those battles to those bigger Canucks forwards, right? Like, there was a lot that I liked early on, and yet I didn't think Edmonton's 2-0 lead was soft. I just thought they were capitalizing off of every error. And by the way, I expect that to continue over the course of the series. Like, you're going to need to be extraordinarily sharp or the Oilers are going to make you pay. And then, you know, that second period, Canucks sort of took over. It felt like they were sending a message. And then boom, boom, two really unfortunate breaks against Artur Silovs. I didn't think either, by the way, was on the goalie. Not, like, if you get saves in those situations, it's like, oh, that was a deceptively tricky stop. You'd love to have them, don't get me wrong. But I just didn't think those were, like, quote-unquote softies or mixed softies. Your mileage may vary. And then slowly it turned. And it turned so slowly. I still reject the idea that there was, like, a moment where momentum shifted.
Well, let's open the whiteboard here. Okay. And we'll get into it. So let's start the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, May 9th. And the headline, of course, is the Canucks win a sensational Game 1 thanks to a three-goal comeback, 5-4 the final over the Oilers in the first game of the second round. And as you were just laying out there, not necessarily one moment where it flipped, right? Rick Tocchet spoke about the crowd reaction to the Lindholm 4-2 goal in the second period, but there was a big lag between that goal in the second period and then when the flurry of goals started in the third period. And really, a lot of the second and third periods looked pretty similar shift to shift, right? Like, I think what you're saying is there wasn't that one moment where it flipped on a dime or, you know, they flipped the switch and all of a sudden it just started to snowball downhill against the Oilers. Like, the Canucks were just playing pretty well and then they kept playing pretty well and then some goals went in. That was kind of the story of it.
Well, and I heard Chris Knobloch after the game, I wasn't in the availability, but noted that in his view, the Oilers' breakdowns weren't that severe. And I do think when you consider the nature of the Canucks' comeback, it's like Stuart Skinner scored on himself. Jeff Skinner scored on himself. Then you get the...
Stuart Skinner.
What did I say?
You said Jeff again.
Oh, my God. I keep doing it, too. I keep, like, texting Jeff Skinner and then having to remove it. the between two stalls. The between two stalls goaltender. Anyway, so Stuart Skinner flubs that Elias Lindholm goal. Then there's a pretty hopeful deflection goal, right? And that one I actually thought Skinner played just as badly.
Yeah, what do you still mean? Incredible bit of skill from Miller. But
wildly intelligent, yes, but yeah. You know, you heard him on the radio,
yeah,
right?
He tries that all the time. He's never scored on it.
Yeah, like it's and here's why it's a hopeful deflection bid, right? Here's why it doesn't usually work. Like, in that situation off that giveaway, Besser, like, what other option does Besser have?
Right.
You know, like, from that spot, he's end of a shift. You know he's shooting it. He's not going around the net and trying to make a play. He's shooting it and going off, like, without question. And it's 4-on-4, right? That was the 4-on-4 goal?
Yep.
So it's like, there's no other option. He's shooting for a stick, or he's trying to beat you far side. Either way, go for the stick, because you're going to have time to react to the other one as a big goaltender like Skinner. Honestly, baffling. And then you get that. And then you get a point shot goal, and then you get the Garland break, the partial break. Which, by the way, how did the Canucks, on a set breakout, heard Tocchet criticizing his club's breakout in the light of day today, but a set breakout stationary over 180 feet, they spring a partial break on Garland? Like, wow.
That was really good.
Nice time for a nap, Edmonton. My goodness.
The Nurse-CC pairing, there might be some vulnerability there.
Wow, yeah, I mean, we knew that.
Yeah.
I actually think they might have to split it.
I think we'll
get into this more.
We can talk about it, but that was if we get into, you know, post just basking in the glow of that game and what could continue, like, that's a major. If you're looking at, like, okay, ways what can be durable from that Canucks win, what can they really put the where can they really put the pressure on Edmonton? Attacking that pairing certainly stands out to me.
Oh, 100%.
For obvious reasons.
A nightmare game.
Yeah.
Nightmare third period, especially for that pair, with Nurse failing to earn the clear too on the 4-on-4 goal. Anyway, it just felt like a slow motion comeback, and in some ways, I felt like the 3-1 comeback was like that too.
Which, like, against Nashville?
Yeah, the game 4 comeback.
Well, no, because that was zero motion, and then it was hyperspeed when they pulled the goalie.
Yeah, but
even, there was nothing happening in that one.
Even then, though, you have the way that it happens, it doesn't feel like a wave in some ways. It just feels like the game continues, and then the Canucks start converting. Like, it's a very different type of vibe that this team has, where they're able to overwhelm their opponents ultimately without it. It feels like they're jumping them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if that game, say the two softies don't go in, but the Elias Lindholm one does, and it's 2-2 going into the third period.
Yep.
How different is that third period?
Probably very different.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it just feels like they're getting these leads, and it's just, it's baffling to me. Like, the reason I comp it to game 4 in Nashville was you had the goal and that felt like it came out of nowhere, and then the Canucks still didn't generate again until like 6 seconds left when Besser scored, and the Preds hit the post, and, like, mm-hmm. You know, so even as the Oilers weren't generating or getting any shots in the third period, like, the Oilers come the other way, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins hits the post, you know, and it's just, there's this slow motion tsunami like ability that this Canucks team has in these comebacks. Honestly, I'm really struggling to wrap my head around it. It's unbelievable stuff.
Well, as Rick Tocchet said, right? His message was, we don't have to push all our chips in. And that's been his message really consistently. Don't go out and try to win the game on one shift, because you're not going to do that. And I think it's especially easy, because where I would differ from the parallels between that and the game 4 comeback against Nashville is, the Canucks were playing horrible in that game, right? And then all of a sudden, they pull the goalie and they're able to generate the pressure and they're able to get the goals. I think it's a lot easier to sell that message of, we don't have to push all our chips in, when you're already playing well, right? When you're already like, hey, guys, like, it's not as if they're dominating us out there.
No, it was a soft 4-1.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like, oh, we can't hang with these guys. Uh-oh, this is going to be a short series.
No, in fact, quite the opposite.
Yeah, it's like, no, we're playing well. We can go out and do this. That doesn't mean you're guaranteed to go complete the comeback, but you had every reason to believe that if you just kept playing your game, you'd see better results.
It definitely, when it was 4-1, I thought, well, they're going to drop game 1, but they should be coming out of this feeling like they can play with this Oilers team, provided that they cut down on mistakes, and then they end up taking it. And it mattered that they took it, obviously, but, like, Dreisaitl looks banged up as the game goes along. Something to watch, because there's a whole house of cards that begins to unravel for the Oilers you know, in the event that he's compromised. Not, and I don't mean compromised in terms of his ability to impact this series, because he's skilled enough. And do you remember in the playoffs 2 years ago?
Like, oh, yeah.
Just how banged up he was and how productive he was. I mean, this is Leon Draisaitl, one of the best players on the planet. There's
and with a track record of playing through really rough injuries.
Really rough
injuries. And not just playing through, producing through really rough
producing
injuries.
Producing at a preposterous clip. So, you know, it not like not like we're writing off Draisaitl's impact in the series, but if he can't drive play as your second line center, there's a whole host of tough decisions that Knobloch and the Oilers are going to have to sort of deal with, which, you know, you don't love for them given the various areas that the Canucks were able to apply real stress on their lineup already 5-on-5 in game one. If the Canucks had lost a game in which McDavid didn't have a shot and only had 1 point,
yep,
and in which the Oilers only got one power play, I think we'd be really worried today, even if the process looked good.
100%. It would have felt like a massive missed opportunity. They needed to come back and win that for exactly those reasons. Because yeah. Connor McDavid is going to have shots on goal. They're going to have more than one power play opportunity at some point. And if you had missed your chance to win in those circumstances, like, again, you can play as well as you want. That still would have felt really, really tough.
And now, too, you've dealt your opponent something of a psychological blow. Like, you know, as that Predators series went on and, like, as the Predators were sort of outplaying the Canucks for long stretches, including, you know, all of Game 3 and 4, right? And then their Game 5 win, right? And you go back to Nashville and it's a missed opportunity. And yet, lingering in the back of your head watching the series unfold is, man, did Nashville ever miss a huge opportunity in Game 4, right? Did Nashville ever miss a huge opportunity in Game 1, right? That's the dynamic now. Like, unless the Edmonton Oilers come storming back themselves and reel off, like, a couple wins to grab it, like, in the back of everyone's mind watching the series is like, man, wouldn't it be different if they just not choked Game 1 away? That's a psychological edge that the Canucks now wield in the series, without question.
Well, and that, again, if there was anything that the season series result was going to do, it would, in my view, it would be a slight psychological edge, right? And that continues, obviously, as long as you keep getting results like that, it just grows that potential edge.
And home ice,
yeah.
Those are the two crucial ones, because, man, did that crowd. There's no doubt in my mind that the way that this crowd reacts to this team, especially as they begin to mount their comebacks. You know, the fact that this team's now scored within a minute of tying games in the third period, in both game ones of their, like, you cannot convince me that the crowd hasn't played a huge role in those moments.
The players are saying it. The coach is saying it. You just have to listen, right? And even like a Lindholm saying after the game where, like, the Oilers didn't know how much time was left because they just couldn't hear their bench. For, yeah. Like, this goes beyond normal just, hey, the crowd was really loud tonight.
No,
you can see, and it's a symbiotic relationship, right? Because, yeah. And I was making this point earlier in the show, like, the team is giving the fans this belief that, hey, even though it's 4-1, 4-2 now, we're not out of it. The fans are responding to that, and then that response helps the players come back, helps the team come back, and that just drives that belief and that energy from the fans. Like, it's becoming a major part of the story of this postseason, is that kind of cycle and that, and the way the fans are showing up for this playoff run.
Well, and that environment was special. The press box legitimately was shaking after the Garland 5-4 goal. Was exceptionally cool. So, big picture, okay? We're coming out of game one with the Canucks having provided us with some additional playoff magic and beginning to build some Boris the Blade aura around them.
Mm-hmm.
You a snatch guy?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so you have no idea who Boris the Blade is.
No.
He's the unkillable Russian.
I was just going to let it slide. I was like, all right, go.
He's the unkillable Russian from Snatch. You know, he can't die.
Okay.
So you understand.
The team of destiny, but just said in a fancier way.
The team of destiny? What, are they like the subject of a Tenacious D track?
If only. That would be awesome. That would kick ass. Are you kidding?
I definitely would. I prefer more like Monty Python's Black Knight.
Mm.
You know, Boris the Blade. There's something unkillable about this Vancouver Canucks team. 4-1 down, multiple softies against, take a penalty on your very first shift against Connor McDavid and give up a power play goal. Like, who cares? Just a flesh wound for this Vancouver Canucks group. And yet it's just one game, right? And we saw with, like, Boston, Florida, you know, it almost doesn't matter to some extent how dramatic a game one win is.
Mm-hmm.
you know, game two can make you forget about it in a hurry. You got to come back to earth was Tockett's terminology today. I liked, by the way, him sort of being critical of his own emotion after the win. I thought that was quite charming.
That was great. That was vintage Rick Tockett. Yeah.
Like, oh, I actually don't like that I got that excited. Fantastic stuff. And so there are some interesting dynamics coming out of this that I think favor the Canucks. Like, the Canucks comeback script or the underdog script here is live. You sort of steal game one, and even if they were the better team, I think we should look at that as something of a theft. Not a smash and grab, but certainly stealing victory from the jaws of defeat. Looks like a key Oilers contributor may be banged up. You're already sowing some seeds of doubt in terms of their goaltending and their second pair. Mm-hmm. Two areas that we would have identified as
potential areas of weakness. Yep.
Potential areas of concern entering this series. You had Elias Pettersson looking good.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I think when you consider what that first period looked like, you know how threatening this Oilers team is. Like, you know what their top gear looks like. You know, Connor McDavid had an outright bad game last night, and yet every moment he's on the ice is terrifying. And I don't even have a rooting interest. I'm just watching this guy. He's like a snake or something. You know what I mean? Like, he's like coiling up, and at any point he's going to quick strike, and it's just unbelievable. Especially if you get him a non-Yanmark winger, I think would help. So, yeah, a lot of work left to do. I would expect, too, this Oilers team, right? The truth serum comment that we made earlier in the week. They have a tendency to F around and find
out. That was my thought, honestly. That you mentioned that in kind of your list of why the Oilers could lose a series or why the Canucks could win this series. What did they do last night? They messed around and found out.
Yeah, they didn't have a shot in the third period.
Yeah.
until the Canucks took the lead.
And I'm not going to say, I was like, oh, they thought they were going to coast or whatever.
They
but
did.
Like, they
no,
blew
no,
it.
Say it.
They
say
blew it.
It. They choked. They choked, and it's because they took their eye off the ball. They stopped moving.
Yep.
They got beat on a set breakout. A stationary set breakout over 180 feet after the Canucks tied the game. They choked, man.
Yeah.
They coughed that one up, which isn't taking credit away from the Canucks, who were the better team on the evening by
a lot. And the Canucks, like, it's a different mentality, right? One team quit when they were up 4-1, and the other team didn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they were rewarded for sticking with it and continuing to play, even though it was a 3-goal game.
Well, the Canucks are the ultimate tryhards. They have such a try-hard identity. You should watch a Canucks warm-up skate where, like, the other team all leaves the ice and the Canucks still have, like, 18 guys shooting at the net. It's like, okay, guys, we get it. You're dialed. No, but, you know, that's kind of who they are. And by the way, it's awesome.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons the crowd's so into it.
Hell yeah.
Like, wow, a team that tries really hard? That's great. That's fun to watch.
So, and that's sort of where I'd come back to is, like, I do think the Oilers are a team that needs to be poked. A team that, like, it makes it harder on themselves than they need to. But then they're kind of like Josh Allen. They're the NHL's Josh Allen. Right? They, like, throw the pick, but then also it's still scary when they have the ball with 2 minutes to go.
Yeah.
You know, because you know that they're basically unguardable. That's what I'd expect to see in game two. And for all that, I think there were things that the Canucks were able to exploit against the Oilers lineup. There were things that the Oilers left on the table against Vancouver that I'm not, like, that worked last night, but that I'm nervous about having worked. So, like, Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers as the first choice matchup pair against the McDavid line was a smashing success. Like, 10 minutes head-to-head ice time, the Oilers had three shots for in those minutes. Like, that's a bang-up job from Soucy Myers. Are you confident?
Yes.
That
are
continues?
You like that? And that's a lock to continue.
Like, that makes me nervous. I'm not. That makes me nervous. The Lindholm line continues to kind of struggle to drive play 5-on-5, even against, like, a hobbled Dreisaitl. And it's like we've reached the point where every time they score, I'm almost like, does this delay the Canucks figuring out that, like, they might need to?
They were way better last night, though, than in the National Series, I thought. Like, way better. Not just for the goals. I think in terms of their underlying numbers, too, it was the most consistent game they've had in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. I have to judge it, though, against Garland and Joshua's wider sample of work. And, I mean, 3-4, love that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, everything else about their underlying form was just, like, okay. you know, relative to what, for example, Pettersson was doing with far too little help, right? Like,
oh yeah.
I mean, again, not criticizing Lindholm had a monster game. Joshua had a monster game. Garland, as expected, right? Like, the Oilers can struggle against that specific player type.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you saw that. He was Vancouver's best attacking forward, or at least their most dangerous attacking forward throughout the game. Not close. So, a lot to like, but also some things that I think could matter or could turn against Vancouver as this series goes along.
All right, quickly to the lineup notes. So it was a day off today, only the media availability. We'll see if Rick Tocchet has anything to say. You know, I saw he wouldn't commit to a starting goaltender for last night, but he also, or for tomorrow night, I should say, but he also said Artur Shilov has earned the right to start. Obviously, the big question from a lineup roster perspective now going forward in this series is not so much on the Canucks side. It's Dreisaitl's status. Expect him to play. Again, we talked about his track record of playing through pain, playing through injuries in the playoffs. But the question is going to be, do they have to switch up the lines if he's a little bit reduced in his ability to drive play? How much can they use him? How impactful is he going to be in this series? The answer could be 100%. We don't know. We don't know what's going on. Obviously, we're not going to get any clarity on that. But that is the big question to monitor here. We should also mention Abbotsford Canucks eliminated from the Calder Cup playoffs last night. So will we see Vasily Podkolzin recalled? Could somebody else be coming up?
Oh, sorry, a lot more, because it lifts the three-man recall limit, which, by the way, actually does matter for this Canucks team because they had to burn two of their three just replacing their injured goalies, right? They needed Tolopilo to come up.
Yep.
They needed anyway, that's now lifted, and I'd expect a wash of players.
Yeah.
Like, I would expect Sochenko to join the team, Cole McWard, you know, like a whole host of players.
Matt
who are
Irwin,
black aces.
Like all those guys. Yeah, Sheldon Dries.
We're getting the black aces up, I'd imagine, either later today or tomorrow. You know, once Abbotsford sort of had time to debrief, and that just adds flexibility to Vancouver's lineup, all told.
Yeah, it gives them a little bit more reinforcements, and you know, I wouldn't expect any changes, but you never know. There's the options there.
And still an amazing season for Abbotsford, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
Obviously not. Obviously they would have preferred to go deeper, but to beat that Colorado team the way they did in the first round, the progress shown with a really like young, cost-effective mm-hmm. roster, and the player development that they saw down there. You know, the fact that Baines made gains and Podkolzin, you know, maybe hasn't popped, but at the very least their leave him there sort of approach, it feels like the organization's been happy with how that's paid off. So yeah, great work down in Abbotsford this year. Disappointing end to the season, but still a remarkable one, all told.
And of course, Artur Shilov's coming up and being the Canucks starting goalie in the playoffs right now.
Okay.
After spending most of the year in Abbotsford. Playoff forecast, so updated odds on this series from Dom's model. After winning game one, Canucks' chances of winning the series rise significantly, but Oilers still the favorite. Model has it as 58% chance for the Oilers to win, Canucks 42%. So not quite coin flip territory, but getting closer to that coin flip territory in this series. How have the betting odds reacted to the Canucks game one win?
Yeah, pretty much in line, although the betting markets are now a little bit higher on the Canucks, maybe pricing in the Dreisaitl injury with a little more confidence than the model would. Oilers minus 140 to advance. Canucks plus 120. That's an implied probability of 45.5%. Still cannot get the Oilers at plus money, though, after one loss. So we'll see where this goes.
That makes sense. You're not going to, like, we've seen game one go one way and a series go a very different way just recently in the playoffs, right? So I can understand that there's not more movement on that end.
Yeah, my tips, though, of buying, if you liked the Canucks in this series, to buy it at 15 or 10 to 1 for the Canucks to win in 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
15 to 1 was the Canucks to win the series in 6. That's now down to 6.5 to 1 after just one game. And to win in 7 is down from 10 to 1 to 5 to 1. So Hope y'all tailed my touts there.
Almost as good as the Dallas Stars tout.
I still feel good about that one.
Yeah.
No,
that's totally fair. That's game one, right?
Well, and at the end of the day, like when you're buying, when you're building a portfolio of long shot bets, what you're looking for is appreciation. They lost game one to the Avs, and they're still priced 7 to 1. I was touting it at 25 to 1. And that's a week ago. You take that every day.
That's the whiteboard for today. Mark Spector, our Sportsnet colleague covering the Edmonton Oilers. He's in town to cover this series. Of course, you know him, you love him. He'll join us next to talk about Game 1 here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.